This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Eek. Today we're talking about whether certain surfaces are more likely to harbor microorganisms, disease-causing microorganisms. And of course, top of everyone's mind is the virus that causes COVID-19. So very recently, an Australian study found that the virus that causes COVID-19 can survive for 28 days on things like mobile phone screens and on banknotes. And these are under certain laboratory conditions. But how does this translate into the risk of us contracting the virus through contact with high-touch surfaces, whether it's in our homes or workplaces? So I have on the line with me Dr. Chang Li Yen, a virologist from University of Malaya, and I'm hoping that she'll help to put this study into perspective for us, but also to generally explain how we can prevent the transmission of other common infectious diseases through contact with these surfaces in our environment. How are you today, Dr. Chang?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thanks, Shelley.
Dr. Chang, let's start with a quick primer of what causes common infectious diseases, just to understand the basics about viruses and bacteria. Can you explain what are these basic differences and how do they affect the body?
So bacteria and viruses are one of the microorganisms that causes infectious diseases. They have got quite a number of differences in terms of their structure, which I will not go into. But in general, they cause diseases by multiplying when it gets into the body, when it's able to evade the immune responses and manage to damage the cells and the tissues in the body. And as a result of that, the bacteria and viruses will typically present with signs and symptoms of the particular disease that it causes when that happens. So it can damage our skin, it can damage our muscles, it can damage quite a number of tissues in our body, including like the lungs, the respiratory tract, and the gut, and so on and so forth.
All right. So there are presumably different ways that these pathogens can get into the body. What would be some of them?
So the way that the bacteria and viruses enters the body of the human host, they are typically categorized into a few methods. The first would be the direct contact with infected materials, such as body fluids and lesions. It can enter through indirect contact with like surfaces, contaminated surfaces. It can also enter through inhalation of like contaminated air or droplets. It can be ingested in through contaminated food and water, or it can be directly inoculated into our tissues and cells and muscles via animal contact or insect bites.
And I'm sure this can potentially go into a lot of technical detail, but perhaps just very generally, are you able to explain the differences between viruses and bacteria in terms of, you know, how well they survive outside the human body and how infectious they can be?
So survival of bacteria and viruses outside the body in the environment very much depends on the particular bacteria and viruses. So there is no like a guideline to say that, let's say, bacteria survives longer or viruses survive longer or the other way around. So it very much depends on that particular bacteria and virus. It can range from minutes to hours to days, depending on the infectious agent. And when it comes to infectiousness, it also depends on the infectious agent. Some can be highly infectious, some can be less infectious. And it also depends on the host, the human, whether there is like maybe underlying conditions, medical conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, or even age. So some elderly folks may be more at risk of disease compared to others.
And that explains why with something like COVID-19 or even with influenza, you do see quite vast differences in terms of how some people react to being infected,
correct.
Right?
Yes, correct.
Can we narrow in on some of the different ways that you talked about how these pathogens can get into the body? And you mentioned indirect contact, for example, with contaminated surfaces. And then separately, you talked about through the air or droplets. You know, with something like COVID-19, we are told that it's transmitted through droplets, saliva or perhaps mucus from the nose and things like that, right? But then we are also told to keep our surfaces clean. So how exactly does the COVID-19 virus transmit?
So far, from evidence and from research data and clinical data, it has been very well proven that COVID-19, as you have mentioned, is mainly transmitted through droplets. So it's inhaled in when you are in close contact with someone who is sick. But like what you have mentioned, Ministry of Health, the WHO, World Health Organization, has been reminding us to clean our surfaces, mainly because we know that the contaminated droplets will land on surfaces, or a sick person who is shedding, not to say a sick person, but one who has the virus, who is shedding the virus, might touch the nose or the mouth where the virus is actually being excreted out, being expelled out, and then touches a surface, and that surface becomes contaminated. Along came another person, where the person will touch that contaminated surface and then to the mouth or to the nose or to the eyes, then that could be a possibility of spreading the virus. But so far, again, articles, reports have shown that it's mainly through close contact, and surfaces has yet to, we are yet to see evidence or any articles that's to report that one gets sick because of touching surfaces. I think it's a bit difficult at the moment, or challenging to show that.
I see. All right. And when we talk about close contact, it's someone's saliva or droplets that you directly inhale because you're very close to them, presumably.
Yes, correct.
How is that different from the virus being airborne?
So when it comes to droplets, landing is much closer. But if it's airborne, because it's in the air, it's lighter, so it can actually travel much further. So if an infectious agent is airborne, meaning that when it comes to physical contact distancing, it has to be much further. So it can actually spread much further compared to droplets.
Okay. Let's come back to contact with surfaces now. So apart from what you explained with regard to COVID-19, what are the common types of diseases that could be transmitted through contact with contaminated surfaces?
So contact with contaminated surfaces, so far, there's quite a number of bacteria and viruses that can spread via this particular method of transmission. Viruses would include the other coronavirus, very much similar to COVID-19, which is the SARS-CoV, which affected us in 2003. And then there are also the other viruses which are commonly causing respiratory diseases like adenovirus, influenza viruses. You also have those that causes the gastrointestinal disease, like rotavirus, which is quite a concerning one for children. For bacteria, you have those that causes like skin infection, which is Staphylococcus aureus. So those are some of those the viruses and bacteria.
You know, speaking of children, you mentioned because they're vulnerable to rotavirus. What about hand, foot and mouth disease?
Yes, hand, foot and mouth disease is also another one that is spread via contaminated surfaces, especially toys, tabletops in nursery, daycare and schools. Yeah. So it's important to sanitize surfaces if there is a hand, foot and mouth disease outbreak reported at a particular center.
So let's go for a quick break now. And when we come back, I'd like to find out what are the types of surface areas that we should be vigilant about within the context of our households and offices. I'm speaking to Dr. Chang Lien, virologist from University of Malaya, about microbes and our common surfaces, to touch or not to touch. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Joining me via Zoom today, Dr. Chang Lien, virologist from University of Malaya. We are discussing how different viruses and bacteria survive on different kinds of surfaces, especially high-touch surfaces that we are constantly in contact with. And of course, a lot of the interest today is about the virus that causes COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2. What kinds of surfaces does it survive on? How long does it survive for? How does that influence or affect the way that we then clean these surfaces or wash ourselves? And of course, there are many other different common infectious diseases that we need to be aware of, not just COVID-19, the common cold, influenza, hand, foot and mouth disease, gastrointestinal diseases like rotavirus, which a lot of children are vulnerable to, comes from contaminated food, skin infections and other bacterial infections as well. So I think surfaces is something that perhaps pre-COVID we might not have paid very much attention to, but now everyone is so much more hyper aware of whether everything around us is free of germs or not. Dr. Chang, what are the types of surface areas that we need to be aware of and vigilant about? Which surfaces could be harboring germs in our homes and offices?
So in households and offices, surfaces that could likely be contaminated or highly contaminated would be those that are high touch points, spots where a lot of people will come and touch it and then move away. So that would include like doorknobs, door handles, switches, and then if it's like in the toilet, it would be the tap, the water faucet, your toilet flush, your toilet seats. Those are a lot of places that people will not likely sanitize or clean. And then apart from that would be, as you mentioned, like tabletops, countertops, actually even the chairs, which has handles. So those are places where a lot of people will touch. And then like maybe in offices, you have your pantries, you would have the water dispenser machine. You may have like your microwave where you use it to heat up your food. The buttons there should be sanitized frequently.
And of course, a lot of us are using personal devices and we're constantly touching them and putting them, mobile phones, for instance, putting them to our faces, you know, as we listen to them. Can microorganisms stay on them as well?
Yes, yes. Phones, whether it's your own mobile phone or even a phone that is at the receptionist or on your table, your desk in your office, if someone else uses it, it's definitely considered like a high touch point. Mobile phone is usually, you will be the one that's using it. So if it gets contaminated, it will be yourself who contaminates it by like touching other things and then coming back to your phone and then putting it to your ears and so on. Yes. So phones are definitely one of the things that most people do not or miss out in sanitizing, especially mobile phones.
All right. What about other surfaces that we may tend to overlook? Windows and walls.
Windows and walls, yes. That's a good point as well. Like walls, usually like if it's a wall where people tend, or along a corridor where people tend to like have a small chat while waiting, like maybe for your hot water to boil or something like that. So if people tend to touch on the wall, that would be another surface that should be looked into for sanitizing. Mm-hmm. Walls in hospital wards, especially those at the infectious disease wards, they are sanitized frequently. So there is like a guideline to require those walls to be sanitized like maybe 3 to 4 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So walls are actually one of those, but a lot of us would actually overlook that.
Yeah. And windows, I suppose we clean windows only when they're so cloudy we can't see out of them anymore.
Yes. When there's like dirt on it, then we clean it. But windows, if let's say if in the house or in the office whereby if it requires ventilation and the windows tend to be opened every day, daily, and someone does it or a few people does it every day, then those would also be considered as high touch points. But if not, if those windows are just there and nobody goes near to it, then very unlikely it would be considered a high touch point. Yeah, but in offices where there is like a meeting room and you have like a whiteboard and you have people standing there at the whiteboard, touching the whiteboard, or maybe the wall that is just where the whiteboard is hanged, those will be high touch points. Mm. Pens as well, the marker pens and things like that.
And, you know, for us working in a radio station, we have all these panels with buttons, right? So when we when we wipe down on surfaces, there's a lot of individual buttons to wipe as
keyboards,
well.
Yes, correct. Even your mic is a really high-risk surface, right? Yeah.
That's right. And we have our own individual mic covers for us presenters, so that we're not cross-contaminating. So does the survival rate of different viruses or of viruses vary according to the different types of surface areas? And I'm thinking also about the differences between, say, a smooth, non-porous surface compared to porous surfaces like cloth. And I mean, we are worried about clothing as well. So, you know, what are the differences there?
Yes, survivability of the virus on different types of surfaces definitely vary. So there's a lot of parameters to be considered when it comes to survivability, including, like as you mentioned, the type of surface, whether it's porous or non-porous, the temperature, the humidity, when the test is to be done. So there has been a couple of reports looking into the virus that causes COVID-19, so the SARS-CoV-2, on the survivability, ranging from paper to cloth to plastic surfaces to stainless steel to mask even. And it really varies.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly is when we look at these kind of reports, we also need to look at the temperature that is being used, been tested. So we have to make sure that if we compare any of those data, we are looking at the same temperature and also the same humidity. When it comes to the surface, like does it survive longer on like paper or porous or non-porous? It depends on whether that particular surface allows the virus to dry up more quickly. So if a surface allows the virus to dry up more quickly, it will tend to survive for a shorter period of time. It does not survive as long. But if it can maintain a certain... able to be dried up that fast.
For instance, with fabric, does it get absorbed into the fabric somehow and it cannot dry up?
So like fabric, if it gets absorbed, the one that's on the surface will not survive as long. But those that is able to get in, it will survive much longer. There's no hard and fast rule that, okay, for this, it survives for this period of time and for that, another period of time. So it really depends on the test that's been done. But so far, it has been shown that like on glass, on stainless steel, it survives much longer. On things like paper and like on cloth, it survives much shorter.
The study that you just referred to, where they're looking at all these different surfaces, is that the Australian study?
The Australian study is the most recent one. So there have been at least another 2-3 papers or articles that have been published much earlier in April. But There's a difference between the ones that were published earlier as compared to the Australian one. What I noted was that the Australian one also claimed that they used a different starting material, a different amount to start off with for their test. So it shows that it lasts longer, it survives longer compared to the earlier articles.
Because what I want to find out, you know, let's take the Australian study for an example. They found that the virus can remain infectious, and this is sort of an average result of all the different ones that different surfaces that they tested. On average, it can remain infectious for as long as 28 days. But, you know, like you said, there are so many variables depending on different surfaces, depending on what temperature we expose these surfaces to. So what are we supposed to take away from these kinds of findings? How does it help us to make sure that our own surfaces in our environment are free of the virus?
Yeah, so it's really important to know that the virus can survive for like from hours up to days, different days, depending on the temperature. But what is applicable or relevant to us as community or public is that we have to continue to practice our usual hand hygiene. That means if like the paper or banknote or cloth or some plastic material that you buy is from the supermarket or shopping mall is contaminated, when you bring that home or before you have you touch your face, your eyes, your nose, your mouth, you have to make sure you wash your hands, wash it with soap and water to remove off any contamination you have on your hands. So that is really important, and that is what our Ministry of Health keep reminding us to do. So the other thing that we can also do is to sanitize these materials. Like if you, I think quite a number of people actually do that. I myself do it as well, because like banknotes, a lot of people touch it. We do not know who has touched it before, and if the person has COVID-19, or it doesn't matter whether it's COVID-19, it could be some other thing. It's to sanitize it if possible, or if not possible to sanitize, to wash your hands and with soap and water. The other thing, I guess, is also like to move away from like banknotes, to use e-transactions. And I think this is picking up like in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So the take-home message from knowing that the virus is able to survive on outside environment, in the outside environment, is to make sure you practice your hand hygiene and sanitize. That's important.
Sanitize the objects, you mean, that we bring home? Mm. I mean, I'm wondering about that. How practical it is. For instance, some people do have the practice of when you come back from grocery shopping of wiping down every single item, especially those that have plastic packaging or you know, come in cans and boxes. I suppose it's not always practical to wipe down everything.
Yes, it's not always practical, but it's a good practice if it can be done. But if it cannot, then we can continue to practice our usual hand hygiene or washing hands with soap and water before we eat, before we touch our face. That's important. Mm. Yeah, or before we put anything into our mouth. Mm. Yeah, we are always reminded that from the very beginning when we are a child. Yes. So, yes.
I just want to ask you if you can explain the concerns about the virus surviving on frozen food packaging, because China recently said that they found traces of it on frozen foods. There were concerns that it was happening in New Zealand as well, although they have ruled out the possibility. So what do we currently know?
So going back to knowing that the virus can survive on surfaces, including plastic, so food packaging mainly plastic. The material is usually plastic. So finding the virus or detecting the virus on the frozen food packaging is not surprising. But what is important in this particular report is that knowing the numbers. So actually, when I looked at this particular report, the percentage, the positive rate of the virus being detected on frozen packaging is actually very low. So if I can, if I may share the data, it's actually 22 packages out of 670,000 packages that they checked, which gives us a rate of 0.003% positive rate. So the chances of one getting exposed to the virus on these food frozen food packaging would be very minimal. And how much exactly is the virus that's present on the food packaging, we also do not know. So it's good to know that the virus has been detected. So I guess the way forward is to go back to the same principle of hand washing. Yeah, so that is really important. That is the most important prevention control that we have at the moment. So we can't move away from the frozen food packaging, I would say. So knowing that the rate is that low, so just continue practicing the recommended prevention control measures of hand wash.
I want to find out, just because some viral material was found on a surface, whether it's the frozen food or anything else, just because it's found there, does it mean that somebody who touches it and then touches their faces would necessarily contract the disease? Because you talked about the amount, right? So how much viral material has to be present to cause disease?
So that's something that we do not know yet. What is the required amount to cause an infection? We seriously do not know. So we just have to be careful. The other thing that maybe I'd like to share is that we will wait for that data. So there's going to be a human challenge trial that's going to be done in the UK, where they are going to expose consenting human beings to the virus and looking at the dosage of the virus that would cause an infection. So this is expected to start sometime next year. We will wait for that data. Then we'll be able to see how much of virus material will be able to cause an infection. So
what will that trial tell us? How will it help us to manage the disease?
So the purpose of that trial, or the objective of that trial, is actually to look for effective vaccine. So at the moment now, they have not shared entirely the details of it, but it's just a very brief announcement that they have got approval, ethical approval, to start this trial, and the objective is to look at effective vaccine. But in order to look at effective vaccine, or in order to look into vaccine development or research, the amount of virus to cause an infection is important. So we know, like, you know, perhaps later, what's the dosage of the vaccine to give and so on and so forth.
We've heard about the D614G mutation, which for in some clusters is leading to more transmissible disease. Do we know much about this mutation and whether that particular mutation changes its behavior on surfaces? Does it enable it to live longer?
Okay, that's a good question. So the mutation, the D614G mutation, so far, data have only shown that the viral load, the amount of virus that is detected in a person who is infected with this particular mutated virus is much higher. So the virus that can be detected if they do a test is that it's much higher. We have not seen any articles regarding will the mutated virus survive longer on surfaces. We also have not seen any articles with regards to whether it causes more severe infection. So far, as mentioned, it's only that those with this virus, infected with this mutated virus, has a higher viral load.
Is that because the virus multiplies more efficiently in the body?
It could be. It implies that. But again, no solid evidence yet. We still need to wait for the results of whatever research study that's perhaps happening right now, mm-hmm. And hopefully coming out in the future. So we can't conclude much. We only can conclude the person with this mutated virus has much higher viral load.
All right. So let's talk about then, you know, you've mentioned hand washing many times now, and obviously that is the key takeaway that we should remember with all this, regardless of how long viruses survive on surfaces, just keep washing your hands, right? But apart from, not just with COVID-19, even with influenza viruses and any other common infectious diseases, what are the common mistakes that we typically make that leads to the transmission of these diseases?
I guess one would be like, we know that we have to hand wash. Not doing it properly could be one. So some people will just put their hands under the running water and, you know, just rub it. Have a rinse, and then they say, okay, I'm done. So that could be one. That's why when it comes to hand washing, the recommendation is to rub your hands properly between your fingers and so on for like 20 seconds, because you want to make sure that the soap, because you need soap and water together to be able to inactivate the virus. Mm-hmm. So it has to get into all the crevices and things like that on your hands. So that's one. The other thing that we tend to do is maybe not now, but before COVID-19, when we cough or when we sneeze, we may not cover our mouth or our nose. Or if we do, we do not wash our hands after that. Mm-hmm. So then our hands would be contaminated with whatever that is on it, the infectious agent. Mm-hmm. And then we also tend to shake hands with people when we see them or when we hug them after a long time of not seeing them. So that could be another way of passing the bacteria or viruses to some other people. The other thing is also I can think of is that when we talk, we tend to sometimes we talk very loudly when we get very excited, mm-hmm. and then we laugh very loudly. But if any of you have the time, search the video of how COVID-19 actually spreads when one talks. You can see the video and the simulation of how much of things actually land on the person that you're talking to or the person that you're chatting to. And it's quite disturbing.
I'm sure it's terrifying.
yes, correct. So I guess those are things that we have not really bothered much or paid much attention to. I guess maybe the good thing about moving forward from this this outbreak that's happening, this pandemic that's happening, is we may likely have better etiquette
instead of shouting at each other.
yeah, perhaps.
So what would be some general rules when it comes to cleaning and disinfecting our surfaces? Is water and soap good enough for wiping down, or do we need to be using bleach and things like that?
So soap and water would be the best. That's like the gold standard. Because we know that it's very effective and it's also very affordable, soap and water. Other disinfectants are also as good, but have to be careful of the surface that is going to be disinfected. So things like, as you mentioned, bleach is a very good disinfecting agent, but it can be very corrosive when it comes to metal. So and after you have used bleach, you also still need to wipe it off with soap and water, because you do not want the bleach to stay on. So if any surfaces that can be sanitized with soap and water, do so. But if not, can always use other disinfecting solutions.
And when it comes to washing hands, which is more effective? Again, soap and water or those hand sanitizers?
Again, soap and water is still the mm-hmm. golden standard. So it's always soap and water if possible. But if you are perhaps traveling, or you're walking in a shopping mall, if you're entering the different retail shops and things like that, and you can't possibly be running from one shop to the washroom and washing our hands, so you can use sanitizer, and that's what most places are providing us with. Bear in mind, the sanitizer is definitely effective in activating the viruses or bacteria, but whatever that has been inactivated will still continue to stay on your hands. So what is on your hands after you use the sanitizer is killed or inactivated viruses or bacteria. So the only way to remove them off your hands would be using soap and water.
I see.
Yeah, so the rule would be that, or the recommendation would be, if you can use soap and water, use soap and water. If you cannot, if you have sanitizer, use sanitizer. But when you have soap and water, then you wash it with soap and water.
All right, because the sanitizer only inactivates it. It doesn't kill it or get it off the skin.
No, it kills it.
It kills it?
Yeah, but it doesn't get it off the skin, yes.
Okay. Oh, we're walking around with dead viruses on our hands.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so always washing with soap and water then. Mm-hmm. Dr. Chang, do you have a final message for us today?
So I would shout out Ministry of Health's recommendation, which is the 3 C's and the 3 W's. So continue to practice the 3 W's. And avoid the 3 C's. So the 3 W's would be continue to wash hands, continue to wear your mask, and continue to stay at home or get treatment if you have any symptoms. Continue to avoid the 3 C's would be the crowded places, the close contact, as well as to have close conversation. So this will be important practices for us to be able to overcome this invisible enemy. And then hopefully we will not have to continue to work from home and we can go on with our usual normal life.
Just don't forget to wash your hands with soap and water.
Yes, yes. So that would be the golden rule.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Chang. I've been speaking to Dr. Chang Lien, virologist from University of Malaya, about how different microorganisms, but particularly the virus that causes COVID-19, survives on different surfaces. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.